720 WGN. It is Dane Neal here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in Chicago. And there are so many reasons to celebrate being in Chicago. There is one that the world celebrates all together. It's New Year's Eve. And, well, we would be remiss if we did not get some expert attention and some input on the best ways to enjoy your New Year's Eve party or your holiday party. You can party whenever you want. We don't want to put limits or restrictions on that. And on the line with us now, he is the undisputed champion of champagne. And when it comes to wine, he is an aficionado, an educator, an entertainer, and an author of a brand new award-winning book, Drink Like a Billionaire, the one and only Mark Oldman. Mark, welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much, Dane. My favorite radio show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, if we could start winning awards, when we do that, we'll have you in, I don't know, it would be the back of the book equivalent for a radio show where you could say that you laughed, you cried, and it became a part of you. But you think about the book that you've written, and that is what you do, is you get there and you impact people's lives when it comes to wine. You change their ideas. You expand their horizons. You're doing that with this new book. Now, we're into it a little bit. People have gotten the book. You've gotten some feedback, some award-winning feedback, which is, I guess, always got to be wonderfully gratifying to hear. But let's hear about that process as people are getting and enjoying the new book.
You know, the Gourmand Awards, which I'm very fortunate to have won, the person in charge was like, you know, it's a fun book, but it's also serious. And that, for me, was the highest compliment, because I don't want to, you know, Mark Twain once said, you know, don't let schooling get in the way of your education. I never want to be schooling people. I never want to make it feel like they're learning. I want to wrap it in great entertainment, great fun, but also give them great ideas and alternatives, ways to drink like a metaphorical billionaire, based on the primary rule that billionaires generally don't like to spend a lot of money. That's how they got that way, and that's how they're staying that way. So what are the beautiful functional substitutes to the expensive wines? You know, how do you pay 20% of the price but get 80% of the joy?
You know, this is one of the things that I think is special and important that the listeners need to recognize about you, is you are one of those rare individuals that can move seamlessly and effortlessly between what is the world of the billionaire wine drinker. You certainly know and have all of the street cred that you'd need to have there. On the education side, of course, people know you as one of those main fixtures over at Stanford and all of that. But you are writing books, not books to kind of talk down to people and say, well, here's what I know from the mountaintop.
Exactly.
You are bringing people along with. So one of those, like for me on the food side, on the radio side, I'm just as comfortable, you know, talking with a Jacques Pepin as I am a kind of a guy in a stained tank top doing a national or world barbecue event in the back of a pickup truck. Right. So that is very cool. And,
exactly.
And talk about that as far as, you know, getting with a lot of those people that may not be as comfortable in the wine world and bringing them forward.
You're really perceptive, Dame, because that's really my modus operandi. I mean, hopefully it's a long, long time in coming, but on my tombstone, I would love some sort of, you know, tip of the hat to the fact that, you know, he was really for the people. He knew his stuff, but ultimately he was for the people. And, you know, the problem with wine, and I feel it too, is that people dress it up with this kind of gray poupon pomposity, and it doesn't need to be. And something that was an impetus for me to write, you know, How to Drink Like a Billionaire, was seeing people at the top of the wine game, the top winemakers, even the late Robert Mondavi, they relaxed about wine. They had done so much that they felt like they didn't have to prove anything to anyone, and then they could be totally transparent, totally helpful to the person who's just sticking their toe into the water. You know, Robert Mondavi, and for your listeners who don't, I know you know that he's the guy who made fine wine fine in California.
Right.
But, you know, he was such an unpretentious guy, and he lived into his 90s. But he would think nothing of, if he was thirsty and he wanted his wine to be extra refreshing, he'd drop an ice cube into his mountain-grown Cabernet Reserve. And he'd tell people, that's how I like it. And, you know, that's how you should be drinking wine. But you really have to give people examples, and you really have to show people that the people at the top of the game are being more relaxed about wine than, let's say, that first week sommelier or that nervous waiter who's just freaking everyone out.
Well, and here's what you do too is like you give people tools to kind of disarm a little of the maybe the condescension or the pretension that is just based around the situation. And really some of those lines and those barriers aren't there. I love those little tips that you have in the book, little piece of advice that aren't necessarily specific to one wine or another, but it kind of disarms the situation and brings it back to basics.
Totally. I mean, even sending wine back, you know, I tell people rather than being like Emperor Nero and, you know, thumbs up, or thumbs down. It could be off a little bit. Give your waiter, your sommelier, some ownership over it. Say, you know, I think there might be a problem. Would you mind tasting this? And any restaurant worth its salt will, you know, the tie goes to the customers. You know, a lot of it's wine etiquette. It's wine culture. Because, you know, there are two types of people in the wine world. There are those who get into it for the pleasure reasons and those who get into it to lord it over others, to have this body of knowledge that that they know that their friends don't know. The first situation is where it's at. Life is short. Let's make it as pleasurable as possible.
Has anyone ever come to you, and this is a little inside baseball here, but has anyone ever come to you and said, Mark, he's like, hey, you're blowing it for us. All of us pretentious, you know, wine superstars over here. He's like, you can't let them know the secrets.
It's true. I no one said that affirmatively, but when it's like you're creeping in my brain, Dane, because when I'm writing the book, that is cross my mind.
Are you sometimes thinking like, yeah, there's a lot of people that are going to be upset with me on, you know, because you have to deal with these people on a regular basis. These are your contemporary, you know, your colleagues that maybe like, should I really go there with that? But, you know, the people, the masses, sometimes they need it.
They need it. And you know what? The really cool wine personalities are hip with it. That's the thing. The great winemakers, the cool wine personalities, the amazing collectors, they're the ones that, in a pinch, will use a Tupperware container to decant their wine, or they will use just a humble $4 corkscrew rather than a $500 gadget to pull their cork out. That's the amazing thing. So, you know, the most dangerous people in wine are the people who don't know that much and are kind of, you know, to use a rap term, kind of fronting. You know, kind of like they're afraid of being found out as fraud. So, like, they're the ones who, and even I, you know, people don't know I've written 3 wine books. So when I go to a restaurant, I'm mistreated all the time. And it's usually by that, like, you know, first week sommelier or that waiter who's, like, correcting my pronunciation. And they're probably right. You know, maybe I got the pronunciation wrong. But I see what people go through, and it ain't pretty. You know, it's scary out there. So anyone who can relieve the stress and give people the best information, and really get back to your original point, I do see myself as kind of a conduit between the cool professionals or the cool collectors and everyone else. Because, you know, everyone else is most of my friends, my family. You know, I have great empathy. In fact, in my mind, I'm still everyone else. Just because I have a little bit more knowledge doesn't mean I'm not mistreated in restaurants or I'm not frightened by that waiter's attitude.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that you understand the full scope of it. And sometimes in situations, the most dangerous person is the one that has no idea how much they don't know. Right. It's not really their fault. They're just completely unaware that they are completely unaware. And hopefully you can guide those people as well. 3 books. And then you've got Drink Like a Billionaire. So this is as far as putting the stuff in the book and sharing it with the people. You've been on tour. You've done some book signings. Is it different around the country as you travel with the book, not only to hear people's, I guess, feedback or questions or interest, but also, you know, from different parts of the country, you know, not just at, you know, an Aspen or in New York at some of these events?
Oh, yeah. Well, I will say, and this is not sucking up to Chicago, but Chicago is kind of the greatest combination of people who know their stuff but aren't terribly pretentious about it. My home area of New York or the Bay Area, I love them. I hang out in them. But, you know, everyone there has an opinion about wine. But I like that, too, because then it's about enlightening them. You know, one of the key parts of How to Drink Like a Billionaire is, you know, if you know you like Pinot Grigio or you know you like Pinot Noir, here are some alternative routes that are probably less expensive and more interesting, more impressive to people who think they've seen it all. So I think And then there are areas like Miami. I've been down in Miami. They're just fun. I mean, so one of the things I recommend doing in the book, and this is relevant to New Year's Eve, and in Miami, because of the Latin culture down there, they tend to know this, whereas most of the other parts of the country don't, and that is to use a Spanish porron, P-O-R-R-O-N. You can get one on Amazon, and whether it's for New Year's Eve or after, it's basically a Spanish wine bong. You could pick them up for $10. It's just a big glass pitcher with a spout. And in fact, oh, you mentioned the great Jacques Pepin. Well, on the back of my book, there's a picture of me. Someone took it, luckily, with their smartphone. I'm teaching Jacques how to use a Peron. We were actually using Dom Perignon, which, you know, when Jacques's around, you got to break out the good stuff.
Right.
But I'm like, hey, Jacques, do you want to try? The male Julia Child, basically. They're the most legendary stuff we have. And I'm trepidatious. I'm scared. I'm thinking, you know, will he even try to use this Spanish vessel of joy to drink his champagne? And he grabbed it and he started chugging like there was no tomorrow.
Oh, Mark, thank you so much for bringing this. I enjoy it very much.
It is so much fun, you know, and that is the spirit of wine and the spirit of bubbly champagne or Prosecco or Cava. So it's all so you know, back to your point about regional differences. Yeah, totally. In Miami, they were about the joy and the pleasure, whereas, you know, Chicago was like the perfect mixture of like joy, but also let's learn new things. And then, like, you know, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, they're like, okay, we really need to learn new things because we already know most of everything already.
Want to let the listeners know we're talking with Mark Oldman, award-winning author of the book Drink Like a Billionaire, Mastering Wine with Joie de Vivre. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more with Mark, especially talking about your plans, options, and ways to enhance your New Year's Eve right here on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal here until 5 a.m. and we are on the line with one of the best and world-renowned wine stars. And when it comes to learning new things, and I've got to tell the listeners, you have the luxury here in 38 states and Canada, learning from one of the best, not only a knowledgeable person on what is good and what you should try to incorporate into your own personal wine world, but as far as celebrations, anytime you get a chance to see Mark Oldman at an event or anywhere, get out there, because it is always a celebration. It is always a lot of fun. So as we come up to the biggest celebration of the year, Mark, are there any things that you can share with people that they can do, assemble, learn, or get good at over the next day or two and incorporate into their New Year's Eve?
Oh, yeah. Well, on the cover of How to Drink Like a Billionaire, it shows me savoring champagne. So that's probably the most exciting thing to do. I tell people, be very careful. The first many times I did it, I used goggles and gloves. And basically, I lay out in the book, you know, how to actually decapitate a bottle of champagne. But, you know, you make it very cold, take the cage off, you run the knife up the bottle, and you hope the thing, just by the forces of physics, will shave off. And that is so impressive. It never gets old. And I've done 3 liters. I've done it with a spoon. You know, I feel like Dr. Seuss saying this. I've done it on a plane. I've done it in Spain.
In a boat with a goat.
Not too many goats. Maybe one in there. But, yeah, so savoring is so much fun. And the ultimate New Year's expression of joy. On the cover of my book, if you do want the inside scoop, people are like, this was a really good shot. You know, I savored the bottle of, wasn't champagne, but it was French sparkling wine called Cremant. But anyway, I savored it, but it took 29 tries to get the right shot. So people are like, well, that's a lot of bottles of bubbly. We actually were doing the shot in a little known area of Central Park. So there are all these tourists walking by, and, you know, every couple minutes we'd have a sabered bottle to offer them. And half the people were like, oh, my God, not only am I here visiting Central Park, you're giving me free champagne. This is incredible. And half of the tourists were like, what'd you put in that? So, but it was fun. And savoring is really one of the great expressions of joy in wine.
You mentioned a couple different options on the champagne side as far as the varieties. And then do you have maybe a wine or two that that people should maybe, that they probably can find at their local store, but that is maybe deceptively good or maybe something people wouldn't be aware of?
Totally. I always tell people when it comes to economizing, but smartly economizing, go for areas that are not famous for that particular wine type. And whereas everyone knows champagne for bubbly, they overlook sometimes American sparkling wine. So whether it's Gruet, it's a French company, but get this, they make it in New Mexico, Gruet. I serve this at my parties. By the way, no connection. I'm not plugging this for any sponsorship reasons. This is just out of pure, unadulterated joy. It's like $15 a bottle, and it drinks like champagne or drinks like bubbly three times that. Gloria Ferrer, F-E-R-R-E-R, from the Napa area, totally high quality. Mum Napa, so M-U-M-M, Mum Napa, totally great. Now, if you want to switch gears, if you want something Spanish, Spanish Cava is made in the traditional method, but because people don't think of Spain immediately when they think of celebratory bubbly, you're going to get it at a discount. So one of the ones I love is Juve y Comp, J-U-V-E-Y, C-A-M-P-S. And that's all over. It's in stores everywhere. And again, it's like $15 a bottle, but drinks like something three or four times that.
Wow. So many great suggestions. And be able to add a little backstory in there, too. It's like, well, you know, this is kind of, maybe if you're not into the Spanish stuff, you can go ahead and maybe this will be your first. You can do that, right? You can have it in your party. It's great. It's got that pedigree. Mark Goldman says it's good. You know that it's right. And for those people that want to, you know, as you get into 2017, is there like a trend or two, or maybe just, you know, one trend that people are looking at that you see as you have your hand on the pulse of all things wine that are going to be hot in the early part?
Sure. Well, one kind of deepening trend is people are getting more and more comfortable with trying wines from regions from all over the world. I mentioned Spain just now, and of course, you know, America, so New Mexico, which is unusual. But, you know, there's been a revolution, and it's just, it's accelerating more than ever that, you know, it used to be that there were just a few main regions for wine, but winemaker expertise, infusions of capital into kind of forgotten areas around the world means there's great wine, not only, let's say, Australia, but not only in the main regions like the Barossa or Hunter Valley, but from Tasmania, you know, the home of the Tasmanian devil. Amazing sparkling wine. Or Slovenia. And you might say, well, where do I even begin to find wines like this? In How to Drink Like a Billionaire, I talk about the importance of establishing a wine wife or a wine husband, that is a wine spouse, someone platonic that you build a relationship with in a good wine store, and you go to them. All right, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to try something unusual, something from Tasmania or something from Slovenia or something from the southwest of France. And a good wine spouse, it might make your regular spouse jealous, the relationship you have, but a good wine spouse will lead you to that promised land.
Wow. Okay, so yes, exactly right. Get somebody, you know, that you can deal with on a regular basis that has access to those things. You can kind of feed in those questions, some of that interest, and they can help you experience some of those things with the wine spouse. Well, I know a lot of spouses out there are going to be jealous because people are going to have their face inside the book, How to Drink Like a Billionaire, Mastering Wine with Joie de Vivre from Mark Oldman. So Mark, where can people get the book and then also the website where they can keep up with all of your envious adventures?
Well, the book's available wherever books are sold. I tend to go to Amazon where, even you know, do authors buy their own book? I do sometimes. So I'll go to Amazon, but you can buy it anywhere, Barnes & Noble. And then if you want to find out more about my crazy exploits and my virtually unlimited imbibing, you could always go to markoldman.com.
He's the best in the business. This year, next year, any year down the road, just stay alive, Mark. We don't want to do one of those retrospectives, you know, oh, here's, you know, we all have to mourn. Mark, that's not happening. Not in this year or anyone in the near future. The one and only Mark Oldman. Thanks so much for what you do. Thanks for taking an extended time here with our listeners, and thanks for being on WGN tonight.
Dane, great pleasure, and again, my favorite radio show, and you are the best, sir, so thanks again.
Oh, stop.